This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. So, was this a transitional week for the markets? The bullishness seen early in the week gave way to price pressure as traders took profits on long positions. I'm sure that there are a lot of bulls in the grain markets that will be more than happy to see the calendar flip to March.
Live from the end of the 14th month of 2020 via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Mike North from EverAg. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Yeah, we got it wrapped up. That's it. We know what the average price for December futures, corn futures, and November soybean futures will be, and that is setting the spring price for the revenue crop insurance products, and it's going to be the highest in 6 or 7 years. So if you're looking for one reason to anticipate a record combined acreage tally for corn and soybeans, that might be one of them, a big reason right there. Just the security of that revenue protection going forward is going to encourage plenty of plantings. Welcome. Welcome to AgriTalk. It's Friday, dude. Let's wrap this thing up, okay?
You probably don't have those numbers yet, do you? Not the official numbers. Not yet. Or are you waiting for a drum roll? I could do a drum roll.
No, I'm not waiting for a drum roll. I didn't have time to put the final pencil to it. But
that's
I'll,
fine.
During
that's
one
fine.
Of the breaks, I'll well, check it out on Twitter, and it'll be there. But it'll be close to 58. It'll be close to 458 in corn and 11. I don't want to say it.
These are unofficial figures. Yeah. Let's wait and get official figures. I'm exactly sorry. That was right. Presumptive of me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
A little bit. I just wanted to do the drum roll. I'll be honest.
I know.
I threw you under the bus so I could
we'll
go.
We'll get to it by the end of the show. Okay. Looking forward to the conversation with Mike. We are going to talk dairy at the start of in the first segment, and then we're going to make our transition right on over to the grain markets for the second segment with Mike. Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, end-of-the-month profit-taking across the commodity world added a dose of selling to the grain and livestock markets today. The lack of a daily export sales announcement for any of the major commodities also failed to attract much buying interest. More selling was generated by the International Grain Council's estimate that global wheat carryover will increase about 5.8% from a year ago. Really, it was just another reminder that there is no shortage of wheat. Technically, the drop below 655 in July soft red wheat futures accelerated the sell-off, and while the market posted back-to-back losses, it was still higher on the week. July hard red winter wheat 18.5 cents lower today, 637.75. July soft red down 13.5 cents to 650 even. September spring wheat 10.5 cents lower, 655, Chip.
But it was just the SR contract that was higher on the week, the soft red. July soft red winter wheat on the week up 6.75 cents. July hard red winter wheat down 4.5, and September spring wheat futures down a nickel. I'm not exactly sure what that is telling us. If there's some concern about soft wheat supplies that limited the selling interest in the SRW market, or if it's just simply the fact that it's the most actively traded market that helped that market close higher this week. We'll figure it out and talk more about that later.
The lack of an export sales announcement disappointed corn bulls, but the new crop market withstood a solid test of support at the 465 level. That was the January high that stalled the price advance until earlier this week. The ability of December corn to bounce from 465 into close high range gives the market a fighting chance to retest buying interest above 475 next week. Generally, the likelihood that corn supplies will remain relatively tight through the summer helped the corn market post modest gains for the week.
May corn futures 2¼ cents lower today, 547.5. July down 4¾ cents, 535. December corn close at 470¾, down 3¼ cents, Chip.
It feels like December corn decided that it's going to have to do some work to hold on to up to 92 million acres of planted corn in the spring of this year. And the reason that I say that is the Dease corn contract was up 10¾ cents on the week. The May contract was up 5¾ cents. So the bear spread really worked in the corn market even more. It worked even more than what it did in the bean market this week, which we'll get to here in just a second.
Concern over the quality of the soybeans harvested in Brazil's northeastern production areas is intensifying. That raised speculation that export demand could return to the U.S. until adequate new crop supplies move to Brazilian ports. Bear spreaders were active in the corn and soybean markets most of the week, but the bull spreads gained today, even with March contracts in the delivery period. Gains in soybean oil futures also helped bean prices end the day well above session lows. November bean futures traded to a new contract high yesterday. Today, futures discovered buying interest on the dip below 1220 to recover for a high-range close. May soybeans 3¼ cents lower, 1404¼. July fell 5¾ cents, 1391½. Novi beans closed at 1223, down 7¾ on the day.
Yeah, you mentioned that we're into the delivery period on those March contracts. We haven't been quoting the March contracts this week, but March soybeans today were down just 0.75 cents. March corn today was up 0.75 cents. So there's clearly an attitude that if there are any deliveries, that they are going to be snatched up there pretty quickly. On the week, like I said, the bear spread worked in the beans this week. But, boy, it wasn't anything like we saw in the corn. May soybeans this week up 24¼. November beans up 26¾ cents. Some of that has to do with that grain quality coming out of some of the earliest harvested beans in Brazil. I got to believe that. That explanation that we might be keeping the export window open just a little bit longer, I think, is probably the reason that we saw as much strength in the market as we did this week.
Well, after a complete washout yesterday, cotton futures found increased buying on the dip below 84 cents in the December contract. May cotton fell 86 points today, 88.33. December cotton 45 points lower, 84.33. I don't know if I want to know the weekly changes.
Yeah, you
cotton.
Do.
Do I?
Yeah, you
do. I want to know.
May cotton was only down 165 points.
Okay.
The first half of the week was just runaway to the upside. I mean, runaway to the upside. And then we get to the last couple of days here, and especially yesterday, the way that old crop market just fell apart, down just 165 on the week.
Livestock's heavy pressure on U.S. equities the past two sessions spilled into the cattle complex at the end of the week. April live cattle 167½ lower, 120 even. June cattle off 107½, 118.42½ today. March feeders fell $1.75 to 138.67½. Quickly, the snout side hog futures just slightly lower at midday. Saw some selling accelerate in afternoon trade. The resulting high range open, low range close points to a test of support. Near $84 in the near term. April lean hogs $2.60 lower, 87.15 today. June hogs $1.57½ lower, 94.17½. Chip,
man, there was volatility in that hog hog market this week. We had a limit up close on Wednesday, so some crazy stuff happening there. On the week, April live cattle down $3.67½. March feeder cattle down 45 cents, and April lean hogs up $2.65. Hogs, once again, the big percentage winner on the gain, up 3.14%. Up high. Isn't that something? Cheap herbicides may sound like a bargain, but they can turn out to cost more than a grower might think. Steve Gumm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, is with us. Steve, why should growers focus more on what they risk losing than the dollars saved?
Well, Chip, it seems counterintuitive, but spending less money can actually cost growers more. The hits come from two sides. First, think about the front end, because if the herbicide is ineffective, they'll spend more money on another application. It'll likely have been less expensive to put down the single application of the effect of herbicide to begin with. We see this all the time. And then on the back end, they may be costing themselves yield. Effective herbicides wipe out weeds fast, allowing the crop to grow with as little competition as possible. If you use an ineffective herbicide and your fields are littered with weeds at harvest, you're costing yourself yield and money.
Absolutely. Steve, what are the key considerations that will help us in selecting an effective herbicide?
Well, when it comes to selecting a herbicide program, look at the big picture. Choosing a herbicide with residual control and multiple effective sites of action will save weed management headaches down the road, and the right herbicide program can even pay back in yield.
Okay, so how can growers get into a cost per bushel mindset to make the right decision?
Well, less weed competition translates into more nutrients, sunlight, and water available for the growing corn crop, which leads to more bushels and extra revenue potential. So it's important to think about the cost per bushel. If the herbicide is a cheaper option but doesn't deliver the performance that maximizes yield, that cost per bushel will likely be higher overall. And if it's a product that delivers leading performance and drives higher yields, that cost per bushel will be lower overall. So it's important to not only think about cost per acre, but what is the return for that cost as well. And so if you think about 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron, you're looking at some pretty big ROI potential.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the right mindset to have right there. Thank you, Steve. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels an acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try Syngenta's online calculator at www.findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Music on Fridays. Let's get it going. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Got Davis with me.
Hello.
And
yes,
you know what? Huh? I am ready for this. Let's get right into the conversation with Mike North from Ever Ag. Mike, welcome back to the show. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, doing great. It's warming up, man. We've had a heat wave. It's 70
yeah.
degrees warmer than it was a week and a half ago.
Yeah, I know it. I was going to send you a picture, text you a picture this morning because I've actually got some bare gravel on my lane out here. And you know what was on the lane picking at some of that gravel
uh-huh.
this morning.
I got to get her in the gizzard.
Yeah, that's right. There are some paintbrush toms out there this morning. Really cool stuff. Yep.
Uh-huh.
Love it. How you been?
Good
Everything
stuff.
Okay?
Everything's great. You know, it's always fun when you can work your way through winter with $5 corn and beans yep. in the teens and, you know, have some fun stories to talk about. And, you know, obviously on the dairy side, we've had plenty to talk about there, too, and some yep. exciting markets along the way. So, yeah, things are
yep.
good.
Yep. Okay, so I'm going to take you honestly when you say that things are good when I ask this question. Everything going good with the new merger and everything there?
Oh, fantastic. So, good. You know, when you look at the two companies, we were a lot alike, but we were also very different. And, you know, the differences often came in the feed conversation, whereas Rice Dairy was, you know, a very dairy-focused, dairy-exclusive company. Commodity Risk Management Group was dairy and grain. And, you know, as we were walking our way through the last couple of years, there's been this increased importance to address feed on the dairy. And so the grain intel and experience that we had marries very nicely with exclusive dairy book that they had, and there's a lot of synergy and rolling out some really neat and fun products for our clients on that front, and really excited about what we're bringing to the table.
Mike, this surprised me a little bit, and I don't know exactly who it was that asked this question on a webinar that I did yesterday. It was for non-farmers. It was kind of an industry you know, people that just want to be aware of what's going on with the markets and revenues and everything. in the industry. But a question came from this group about the impact that protein prices, meal DDGs, are having on milk margins. It's got to be tightening things up significantly, isn't it?
Yeah, there's no question. You know, and that's, as we look back to last year, one of the big reasons why we were, you know, shouting from the mountaintops, address $300 meal. And, you know, here we are looking at $430 meal. Now, keep in mind that, you know, feed is the biggest input into a dairy in terms of its cost and the share of expenses. And of that, the biggest expense is on the corn side, the forages. The concentrates certainly play a role. So higher costs don't help. But, you know, that $130 change in soybean meal, while not, you know, welcomed, right, it's not something that is going to take a guy out of the game. So right, it's going to be painful, no question. And, you know, the good news for dairymen is that there's $375 meal out in the fall market. So as we look into 2022, we can, you know, already start to address some of that for next year so that we aren't getting caught in that same trap that guys are, you know, looking at right now, paying $420, $430 meal.
Yep, yep. You know, it brings up a good point for me. My attitude when I was doing some advice, my attitude when it came to protein was just lock in the price so that you know what you're working with going forward and manage everything else around that protein cost that yep. you've got, whether it's in your hog ration, your cattle ration, your dairy rations. Just lock in the dadgum price so that you can go forward with some clarity on the other issues.
Yeah, and I would even go a step further with that, Chip, and say not just lock in the price, but get it booked with your supplier.
Sure.
Because end of day, I mean, how many stories have you already picked up on of crushers off, yep. you know, going to no offer June, July, and onward? Well, what if the beans are so sky high they can't afford to buy them, and now they're shutting plants down for maintenance or whatever might yeah. constrict production? Who gets the soybean meal first, the contracted guy or the uncontracted guy?
Well, you know, it's a lot easier to deal with the guy that's got a contract than the uncontracted guy.
That's right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's yep. a fact. And like I tell all my yep. dairy clients, you know, we could hedge the pants off of this market for you and do a great job. But your cows, they prefer feed over cash. Those $100 bills don't taste as good. You know, you know, they want feed.
Love it. Love it, love it, love it. So let's set the stage for a quick conversation here on milk prices. You got the February, which I know we're not going to pay a whole lot of attention to, but I just let everybody know what the forward curve is on milk prices. February at 1563, March at 1622, April at 1743, May at 1775, and that tops it out, and we dip back down to $16 for the June contract. So kind of a bear spread market in here. Mike, why?
Yeah, so basically, as you look at the immediate part of this market, we're trying to really wrap our head around what is coming in the last few contract awards for the food box program, which was put in motion when we passed that stimulus bill in December. And then we're trying to wrestle with the potential future spending by the government in this newest $1.9 trillion stimulus package that includes about $4 billion for food. And so the forward curve is very wonky right now. And if you're looking at class three, we kind of, you know, as you spelled it out, we kind of ramp up into April and then we just go flat thereafter, yeah. which is not yeah. typically how the market is structured. You know, typically you'll find your peaks in that September, October timeframe. But, you know, right now we've got it set up to kind of peak in June, taper, and then re-peak in October, and then, you know, taper back. And that type of market is a market that's saying, hey, we expect a government to be involved, but we just don't really know to what extent yet. And that's really the biggest question the dairy market's trying to answer right now. The biggest benefit we have right now from a dairy perspective is that Vilsack just got confirmed for his second round in his role as secretary. And in between those two, he served as the president of the United States Dairy Export Council. Yep. And so we've got a guy that really gets dairy, that has done a great job of expanding markets around the world for dairy. And I do believe that dairy is going to be not uniquely postured, but certainly is going to have a much more prominent role than it has in the past in serving some of these needs. We all know Vilsack has been a friend of SNAP and WIC and some of these other platforms. There's probably an outlet for dairy to, you know, come in and satisfy some of that need.
That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. His work at U.S. Dairy Export Council, he was on AgriTalk several times talking about how the markets were expanding. And he did reference it yesterday in his first press conference when he said that, how it built his appreciation for trade and the importance of trade. And he said, it's not like I didn't appreciate it before, but it just amplifies his appreciation for trade. And then he turns around and he says, we're going to, we think we can hold China to the phase one commitment, purchase commitments. And I was like, wow, that's the first time I've heard anybody from this administration even acknowledge that there's a trade agreement with China and a phase one purchase agreement. It's like, wow, here we go. This starting off pretty reasonable.
Yeah, and we're seeing people in their roles start to acknowledge that our toughness with China in the last administration was not unwarranted. And I'm glad to see that there's some continuity to that discussion. I think we can all appreciate it, you know, from a 30,000 foot view, why that's important. But at the end of the day, it's great to see that, you know, beyond that, they're also looking at all of the other trading partners that we have.
Yes.
And, you know, really looking to expand the footprint of who we do business with, because China's a great outlet for us to push product to, but, you know, it's a cumulative impact. And as we saw coming through the deal with China, you know, a lot of these trade routes are circular. So, yep. You know, you might pull it from one, you take it from the other. And it's good that we're talking to everybody. And I like
That's
to
right.
see that.
That's right. That's right. Okay, we've got to go to a break here real quick, Mike. But what I want to do when we come back is I want to talk a little bit about the risk management plans that you've got on milk. And then let's have a conversation about what you expect through the 2021-22 marketing year. We're talking with Mike North, EverAg, right here on AgriTalk. It's time for Headline News, featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers. First thing today, African swine fever concerns fuel aggressive profit-taking in Chinese soybean meal futures. In other words, they're concerned about overall demand for soybean meal because of dead hogs in that country, that it's triggering some lower prices on meal. French ratings signal grain crops overwintered well. The Senate rule says the proposed $15 minimum wage doesn't fit within the budget rules. How many people make minimum wage? Very few. The Labor Department says about 247,000 make the 7.25 minimum wage. About 865,000 make less. Global trade has rebounded, with Asia taking a bigger chunk of exports. And like I said, ASF is spreading across South Africa now. Give Pro Farmer a try at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. The chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
I'm going to take a little weekend holiday.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to get together with the kids and do a little bit of ice fishing. How's that sound?
Ice fishing. Well, you better ice fish while you can, bro. Oh. The ice's days are numbered.
Oh, days are getting longer, baby. Days are getting longer.
You better
like
be careful
I said,
out there. Yeah.
Turkeys were gobbling this morning. Before you know it, spring's going to be here.
You got your inflatable safety pants in case you find the thin spot always on the ice there?
Always.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, good.
They're the
good
one with the ripcord.
That's right.
Yeah. Exactly. Turns into a raft.
I think we just invented something really cool just then.
I think we did. Recap how the market's closed.
July hard red winter wheat 18.5 cents lower, 637.75. July soft red fell 13.5 cents today, 650 on the tiller. May corn futures 2.25 cents lower, 547.5. July corn slipped 4.75 cents, 535. May soybean futures 13.25 cents lower, 14.04. July beans fell 5.75 cents, 13.91.5. Here's May cotton off 86 points, 88.83. On the livestock side, April live cattle 167.5 lower, 120 even. March feeders fell $1.75, 138.67.5. And April lean hogs 260 lower today, 87.15. That's your quick market recap. Back to you, Chip.
All right. Thank you very much. Mike North with EverAg is our guest analyst today. Mike, so we talked about the structure of the Class 3 milk market. What do you do with what kind of a risk management strategy do you use with that kind of a structure?
So as you look forward, our biggest go-to right now with all this uncertainty around government involvement is DRP. You know, if you look at the forward curve, that's kind of your first checkpoint. The next thing you got to do is look at the vol structure. And volatility over the last year has been most impressive, not unprecedented. We saw even higher volatilities in 2009, 2010, but ultimately, because it's more elevated than where we were, the DRP offers a subsidized put option of sorts. So that's our go-to to establish that floor, and then essentially we'll use CME options around that as markets change and, you know, move up or down.
Okay. All right.
So that's the play right now. And right now, Q2, 3, and 4 are all still in play for this year. We're even already into the 2022 calendar. And that's a great first start. And a lot of people are able to find floors in that 1650 to 1660 level out in the second half of the year based on current prices.
Now, the RP gives you the flexibility that if the price goes up, you can capture some of that appreciation, right?
So the RP basically acts like a put in the way that if the market goes up, you're still going to get it, but there's no change in the policy to accommodate that new higher price. Once you set it, you set it. So that's where the CME options come into play, and using that around the original DRP endorsement that's written.
Gotcha. Okay. Let's go over to the grain trade here and just give me some general thoughts on how the market traded through February, Mike. It's a pretty impressive month when you put it in the rearview mirror.
You know, it is. And when you talk about, February, obviously the big thing we, have to look at is the fact that this was the averaging month for crop insurance. So, as we came into the month, we closed out January at 445. We finished it at 470. So a 25-cent gain through the month. That is a nice place to start as you're talking about, crop insurance levels. But I think as we go forward in these next few weeks, while we wait for planting intentions numbers and, we work through some of this new data, I think the market's going to be, like we often see, a bit more vulnerable to be choppy. But I think it's really fair to be somewhat bullish this market right now as we head towards summer. Even if we end up going choppy for the next 30 days, I think there's room for this market to see some appreciation, especially if weather incites any scares to the market. So, this market right now has us looking at, trying to take a little bit more of a, passive defensive posture. I love options in this particular environment, make little sales against key resistance. And, we just came off some pretty good numbers that way. We hit a target against this 479 high yesterday that triggered another sale for us. I think you got to still keep doing that along the way. And, in this type of a market, you engineer your sales activity to be a little bit more sparse in terms of, you know, the distance between targets, and you just, you know, pull your volumes back a little bit. Just allow for volatility to kind of play into your hand.
Okay. Okay. You know, I was looking back at some of the carryover estimates for that we got this year for the 2020-21 marketing year, Mike. And I find it interesting that in August, now that was before the derecho, that was before the late July, August, September kind of stealthy drought took some bushels away from us in the Western Belt. It was before all of that could really be factored in. And we were looking at a corn carryover estimate of 2.75. We were looking at a bean carryover estimate of 610 million bushels. And here we are now at 1.502 billion bushels and 120. And looking forward to another marketing year with some similar carryover projections from USDA that we got last week. Boy, talk about a whipsaw of fundamentals for this market. And a lot of it, it's not just demand driven. We lost some from the supply side. We cannot forget that. But a lot of it was driven by this demand that we've got in the export markets. And it's really created some opportunity for the grain guys, the row crop guys, over the next 18 months.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what's interesting about that forward look we get with the ag outlook numbers is that even after you consider record acres for soybeans and record yields for soybeans, we're only left with 145 million in their, you know, very loose projection looking forward right now. So if we don't have record acres and we don't have record yield, where does that leave us next year?
Yeah.
You know, obviously, you've got to run it through, you know, all of the demand filters of the balance sheet. But, you know, honestly, if China remains an active buyer, and, you know, history tells us they will be, bottom line is that we ultimately are going to be staring at a tight bean balance sheet next year. And corn is not too dissimilar, you know, with a 155 on their numbers for 2021-22 with 92 million acres and a 179 yield. You know, there again, what happens if, like we saw this last year, you start to lose some yield right at the very end of your growing season?
Yeah.
You know, there's some interesting things to play out yet. You know, I think we have to still be a little bit wary of the fact that demand rationing is real, and, you know, it's hard to fully quantify that at the front end. But if you look at the dairy production, the milk production report that just was released on Tuesday, we were expecting growth in that 2-3% range year over year, and it only came in at 1.6. And, you know, we're going to watch this in next month, but, you know, we're almost wondering if we're not already seeing some pushback on the dairy side because of where feed prices have gone in the last 90 days.
Well, so, they're typically, you know, very quick to react to stuff like that, Mike, aren't they?
Indeed, indeed. Yeah. And so, you know, that's why these forward-looking projections, they're kind of like a weather forecast. They're subject to change. But, you know, with all that said, I think there's room for some excitement and room for some, you know, some pretty decent pricing opportunities. But as we've seen in the past, those can disappear. So you don't want to go asleep at the switch.
Right, right. Yeah, and I like what you were talking about with the pricing opportunities that are already available on the 2021. I keep thinking about, you go back to when we were looking at a 2.75 billion bushel corn carryover projection, and everybody was saying, geez, it looks like futures are going to 280. If I could have just gotten some of this corn sold at 420. Well, we're 50 cents above that now. You ought to be able to lock in a floor like you were talking about, Mike, and do it with some comfort and get it, just go to sleep at night.
That's a fact. I mean, this week we bested the 2019 highs this week. And if you go back then, you know, 2019, it was a poor planting season. Oh, my goodness, we're not going to have any corn this year. We go ripping higher. We hit those, you know, those 470 highs. And ultimately, now we're in a place where we've bested those. And how many producers wish in September of 2019 they would have sold it all in the midst of that time when we thought we weren't going to have any crop? Yep. You know, that's how fast this stuff can change. And, you know, when you look at corn, we love to plant it. So is the USDA being conservative with 92 million? What if we come in here and plant 95? Yeah. Now, maybe that's, you know, going to give us a better opportunity on beans. But my goodness, you got to be proactive. You got to be forward looking here.
Attaboy. Great message, Mike. Good job. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later. And if I don't, I'll talk to you before turkey season. Don't worry about that. Have a good weekend, buddy.
Yes, we will.
All right.
Hey, you too. Go get the fish.
All right. You know it. That is Mike North, EverAg. Okay, when we come back, I've got a couple of thoughts that I want to pull from the conversation with Mike. Take a look at the weather and wrap things up for the week.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Dude, we've been on the air for almost 7 years, and I don't think I've ever heard this bump.
It's a fresh one.
From I don't know
El
if we're going to call
Manzana
Phil
Grande.
Fresh. I don't know if we're calling Phil fresh or not, but... I like it.
I do too. I'm a big
fan
of Genesis.
He's doing this, it's just dawned on me why he's done this.
Why has he done this?
You know, he likes to get us into a loop on Friday's final segment.
And he brings out his scratch records
with Phil
on Friday.
Yeah. Yeah, knock the needle out of the groove, Big Apple. Outstanding work. Outstanding. It gets me every time, too. It takes me a little while to realize that. And then I realize, wait a second, we're like 35 seconds into this. He should be shut.
Oh, he's doing a thing.
Yes. Yes. I love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. All right.
I've been working on a jingle for our pants idea. You want to hear it? Just real quick?
Sure.
It goes like this. You can pants if you want to. You can leave your fish behind. Because if fish wore pants, then there's a chance they could cover their behind. Inflate your pants. Inflate your pants. You'll be warm and floating fine. Safety pants from the makers of Caution Socks. What do you think? I think it could catch on. Safety pants.
The safety suit. Huh?
Yes.
You know, if you're out there ice fishing, it's cold, usually.
Why not a whole suit?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Make insulated coveralls that when you pull that ripcord, people better not be standing too close to you. You're going to look like you got punched in the face by an airbag that fell off a light pole. Did you see that?
I did.
Did you see that truck?
Oh, knocked the hat right off the poor guy. You know, and the other thing is with the safety coveralls idea... If you get bored, if the fish aren't biting, you and your buddies could have like a sumo kind of a thing going on.
Right.
In the fish house.
Why not?
This is coming together. Yeah.
It is. It really is. For those of us that might be a little top heavy, can we think about some weighted soles so that if we do end up in the water and having to pull that ripcord? That it'll pull our feet down for us.
Wind up upside down.
You don't want to end up upside down in something like that, dude.
I'll talk to the AgriTalk R&D department. We'll get R&D on this. Well, I got people.
That's right. Oh, man. So we were talking about with Mike about how quickly things can change. And we were talking about... how the fundamental basics of corn and soybeans have changed from August to now. And in reality, that's a quick change to go from 2.75 down to 1.5 and to go from 610 million down to 120 million. And then get the projections looking forward that are going to keep us in a relatively tight situation. very, I mean, we're going to be super, super sensitive to any and all threats to production in 2021.
Maybe you guys covered this, and I was fiddling around and not paying attention. I got a lot of balls in the air over here right now.
Okay. Yep.
Given that, aren't we a little undervalued or not?
I would argue that there's plenty of tension left in the spring on the new crop in particular.
Okay.
And the way that the Deese corn and the November beans have been trading pretty much in sync, you've got big move today or this week. You got Deese corn up 10 and 3/4 cents on the week. Novi mm-hmm. beans up 26 and 3/4 cents on the week. Took the bean corn price ratio out to 2.6 to 1. It's and for the first time this week, I talked to producers, and we mentioned it yesterday. We talked to producers that are talking about the easy button. The easy button mm-hmm. being moving acres from corn production over to bean production because the revenue potential is there. But you go back a couple of weeks ago and the conversation that had with Bob Birdsall the Farmer Forum, remember that, where he said, you know what, I've tried to bust out of my my rotation in the past, and doggone it, it's always kind of, it just doesn't work like you think it should. Now, the easy button guys right now are admittedly in that derecho area from last year, that they may be looking for a reason to go away from corn on corn anyway. And that could turn out being very, very wise. Okay, so quick, right? Quick movement.
Yeah.
From August to now, what about from Wednesday night to Friday's low? Okay. Deese corn from 479 down to 465 for a 14 cent drop. Novi beans, 1252 3/4 down to 1208.5 at the low for a 44.25 from Thursday session high to today's low. Changing and changing very, very quick. National Weather Service 6-10 day outlook March 4th through the 8th has got above normal temperatures across most of the U.S. If you get right to the center of the bullseye where the above normal temperatures are expected, we're talking about Britain, South Dakota. Okay.
That's hello, the bullseye. Britain.
Yes. Okay. 70% odds. Hey, Dwayne. 70% odds of above normal temperatures March 4th through the 8th. But above normal temperatures across the entire Corn Belt.
Yeah, baby.
And below normal precipitation. So, I mean, this thing, it seems to be locking in warmer and drier than normal. In the 8 to 14, March 6th through the 12th, the above normal temperatures stick around across the Corn Belt. But we do get some above normal precipitation expected through the Eastern Belt and even into the Western Belt. So, wow. But at least we've got those warm temperatures around. All right. For Davis and for producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, thanks for listening. Monday morning, Chuck Grassley and Machinery Pete. Monday afternoon, Rich Potson. Critical Point Podcast on AgriTalk. Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.